Welcome to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. On today's show, we're going to look back to 9/11/2001 to reflect on the changes that have occurred over the last 20 years. And we've got a little reader that I found that I want to share with you. 9/11/2001 was a day that changed and shaped our nation. For friends and family of the 2,977 victims, it was a day of immeasurable loss. For Americans around the country and the world, it was a time of unity in the face of a shared struggle. And for some, it was a call to action. 20 years ago, on September 11, 2001, the United States came under attack. In response, over 181,000 Americans enlisted in the ranks of the active duty service, and nearly 73,000 joined the enlisted reserves in the year following September 11th. And many claim that it was 9/11 that inspired them to enlist. And on that fateful day, out of the fires and tragedy, emerged a new generation of Americans, ready and prepared to serve and defend their country and their fellow Americans, no matter the risk. And joining me now to talk about that day is Major General Sean Mankey, who was named the 32nd Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard. And as Adjutant General, he's the senior leader of the Minnesota National Guard, which includes the Army National Guard, the Air National Guard, and all joint units and personnel in Minnesota. And General Mankey, welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio.
Hey, Tom, thanks so much for having me. And I know you got a great show today with some great guests. Major General Deskins, the Deputy Director of the Air National Guard, of course, our own Lieutenant General Jensen, now the Director of the Army National Guard, and then wrapping it up, the Chief of National Guard Bureau, General Holkinson. So looking forward to some great conversation today as we talk about 9/11.
Well, sir, it's great to see you at the Pentagon in Washington, D.C. General, I wanted to ask you, 9/11, where were you that day, and what were you thinking about when these attacks happened?
So Tom, I was working that day and sitting in the office listening to the radio, and heard that an airplane had struck at the World Trade Center. And at the time, I thought it's probably a small general aviation airplane, a Piper, maybe a Cessna, something like that. And later that morning, I walked down the hall and saw that it was an airliner that hit the World Trade Center. And I'm an aviator, so I knew that something was probably wrong. And then shortly thereafter, the second one struck the World Trade Center. And then I knew there was something definitely wrong with what was going on that day in America. And as we all know, it changed the world, changed what Americans think and feel and how they responded. And as we look at how the National Guard responded, the 133rd Airlift Wing had an aircraft in our nation's capital region. It had taken off a little after 9 that morning. And then Flight 77 scheduled to depart Washington Dulles at 9:32 a.m. that morning for Los Angeles. And the 133rd was asked to observe that aircraft, and they followed that aircraft, and they saw that aircraft strike the ground at the Pentagon. Certainly something that changed that crew member's life for the rest of their life. And at the time, they really didn't know what was going on. They thought maybe it was a mechanical issue or something. But as they turned to head towards Minnesota, they tuned up one of the radios in their aircraft and learned of the attacks at the World Trade Center and the aircraft that had struck that, and knew clearly America was under attack. And on their journey back to Minnesota, they actually flew near Pennsylvania and saw the smoke from the aircraft that struck the ground there. And, obviously the world changed that day for every American. Shortly thereafter, our 148th Fighter Wing out of Duluth was conducting air combat patrols over the United States. And actually, they flew more combat air patrols than most units in the Air Force or the Air Guard. And President Bush ordered over 130 soldiers to provide security for our airports in Minnesota. And shortly thereafter, that number continued to increase. So that's kind of what 9/11 looked like for the Guard, what 9/11 looked like for me. And Tom, I think, everybody knows who can remember where they were that day, what they were doing, and, the conversations they had that night with their significant other or their family as they look back on what happened that fateful day.
General, as the Adjutant General for the Minnesota National Guard, you're in charge of both the Army National Guard and the Air National Guard, and you were a helicopter pilot. I hope you get to fly those occasionally these days, but it has to be hit home to you that we've got the 133rd Airlift Wing with C-130s and 148th Fighter Wing with the F-16. And, of course, 12,000 soldiers, and everybody was involved in it, and they were all watching it. And things changed from the status of 1 weekend a month and 2 weeks in the summer How long did that take over the 20 years? It wasn't immediately, but it changed quickly, didn't it?
It sure did. You know, the 148th, as I said, immediately started conducting around-the-clock combat air patrols over, you know, primarily the southeast and midwest United States. And the 133rd started moving stuff around because there was no civilian air traffic flying at that time, remember, until we kind of figured out what was going on and had procedures in place to make sure that everything was going as it should be going. But, you know, shortly thereafter, the National Guard really went from a strategic reserve to an operational reserve. And airmen and soldiers were busy, you know, from the Guard. You know, General Jensen will probably talk later about the impact of the entire Guard. For Minnesota, we have mobilized nearly 30,000 soldiers and airmen since 9/11 to respond to the federal mission globally, whether it be Afghanistan, Iraq, or other areas around the globe to respond to what our nation's asked us to do. And you know, they have been busy, but it hasn't just been the soldiers and the airmen making this happen. It's really been the nation and really the citizens of Minnesota. Because when you deploy a unit out of a small town armory, you're really impacting that entire community. And, I know this, Tom, but our soldiers and airmen, they live in the community. They work in the community, and of course they serve in the community, and they also serve for the federal mission wherever they're directed to by the Commander-in-Chief, the President of the United States, whether that be Afghanistan, Iraq, or other areas across the globe.
We're speaking with Major General Sean Menke from the Pentagon, Washington, D.C., on the 20th anniversary of 9/11. And General, you know, you've talked about the 30,000 troops that have been mobilized since that date. That not only affects them, it affects their family. It affects their employers. Most of your troops are weekend troops or were before 9/11. And when they leave their job for 6 months or a year, those employers still have to get their work done, but they're required by law to hold that job open. The employers in Minnesota have been extraordinary. And your troops have come back with open arms to go back to those jobs.
Yeah, and you said it, Tom. You know, we have some great employers in Minnesota, and we have several employers that have received the highest award from the Employee Guard in support of the Reserve Network. And, you know, we'll recognize a couple more this fall, and we can probably address that on another one of the upcoming shows. But the employers really have gone above and beyond. And, you know, that's one of the things about the National Guard. When you mobilize the National Guard, it's, you know, the entire nation feels the effort that goes into what they do. You know, in our family support and our structure, try to ease some of the burden on the families that give so much when their loved ones deploy. You know, and unfortunately, many of our families have made that ultimate sacrifice and lost a service member. And we have many Gold Star families in the state of Minnesota. And you know, my heart goes out to them each and every day as they work through the tragedy that happened for their loved one that they lost since 9/11.
In general, over those same past 20 years, things like the Yellow Ribbon Program have blossomed in Minnesota. Groups all over the state, communities, businesses standing up to help those families, and outfits like the Hugo Yellow Ribbon sending thousands and thousands of pounds of gift boxes to your troops overseas and helping with helping them get through their missions.
Absolutely, and you know, and I can't say thank you enough to these organizations. You know, and it's the Yellow Ribbon Network. It's serving your troops. It's a Minnesota Military Assistance Fund. It's all of those organizations who give so much to our soldiers and airmen, and really all active duty families that are in the state of Minnesota as well. Just a tremendous support, and we're in a very good place to have the generosity that, you know, many states don't have that same support that we have in Minnesota.
In general, we're just about out of time, but are you still looking for a few good men and women?
Tom, we are. And you know, I would say that, you know, I joined the Army 30 years ago, and I would have never thought that I'd still be serving in the Army today. And, you know, I've had a great ride. But I would tell you, to our listeners, if no matter what your sexual preference, no matter what your religious beliefs, no matter what your race, gender, the Minnesota National Guard has got a lot of opportunities for our young men and women. And, you know, we're always looking for some good people. And I would tell you that the opportunities that present themselves to the Minnesota National Guard are fantastic. You know, and I equate it to, you know, job satisfaction is very important. And, you know, I can honestly say that I feel good going to work every day. I enjoy what I do, and I'm part of a team, part of that Minnesota National Guard team that not only gives to the community but gives to our nation, and we do some great work, and appreciative of what we do serving in our community for our federal mission and throughout the world. But just a great opportunity, and it's like being on a team from high school. You're part of that organization. You get to know great people, and you get to do fantastic things.
General, thanks for joining us on the occasion of the 20th anniversary of the attacks of 9/11.
Tom, thank you for having me.
That was Major General Sean Mankey, Minnesota's Adjutant General, on Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. We're recording today from the Pentagon in Washington, D.C., and we're taking a look back at 9/11-2001 to reflect on the changes that have accrued over the last 20 years. And joining us now is the Deputy Director of the Air National Guard, Major General Dawn Deskins. As Deputy Director, she assists the Air National Guard Director in formulating, developing, and coordinating all policies, plans, and programs affecting more than 107,700 Air National Guard members and civilians in more than 1,800 units throughout the 50 states, the District of Columbia, Puerto Rico, Guam, and the Virgin Islands. And General, welcome to Minnesota Military Radio.
Thank you very much. Good to be here.
Ma'am, I appreciate you taking some time out of your busy schedule. We wanted to get some reflections on 9/11, but before we do that, can you tell us a little bit about your career? I understand that you've been in the service for a while, and you've had some firsts, such as the first female Deputy Director of the Air National Guard.
I have. Joined the Air Force, loved the mission, loved the people, just was really drawn to serving and the opportunities as a woman. And this was 1984. So I did that with my first assignment being McCord Air Force Base, and was there at the Northwest Air Defense Sector, which was part of NORAD, and was there for a few years. And then I went down as a female instructor, the Air Battle Manager Schoolhouse at Tyndall Air Force Base in Florida. I was at 10 years. I couldn't see 10 more years in front of me, so I said, I'm going to get out. And there was an opportunity that there was an Air National Guard unit. It had been active duty up in Central New York, and it was transitioning to the Guard. It was the Northeast Air Defense Sector. It was my skill set. They were looking for full-time people to join the unit, and I applied and was hired, and I spent 19 years in that unit. I was getting ready to retire, and I've gotten an invitation to come down to the Guard Bureau and work when the Air Force was just establishing some of their policies in response to sexual assault prevention and response. And Lieutenant General Clark, who was the director of the Air National Guard at the time, hired me to come down and work those programs and make sure Air National Guard equities were considered as the Air Force was going forward with their policy. So after that, I was then the NGB, National Guard Bureau A3, which is in charge of operations, was the first woman to hold that position. And then they said, it's time for you to have a very difficult job. We want you to go over to Europe. So did that for 3 years, just under 3 years. Came back to the National Guard Bureau. I was a J1 doing joint personnel policy and manpower for the Guard Bureau, and then was hired into this position as the Deputy Director of the Air National Guard. So 37 years went by really, really quickly.
And the first woman to become a Deputy Director of the Air National Guard.
That is
congratulations,
correct.
Ma'am.
Thank you.
We're speaking with Major General Dawn Deskins, who's the Deputy Director of the Air National Guard on Minnesota Military Radio. General, I want to take you back to 9/11-2001, and you were on duty that day.
I was. Major Deskins at
Major
the time.
Major Deskins,
so
yes,
a few
ma'am.
Promotions ago. As I mentioned, I was at the time stationed at the Northeast Air Defense Sector, and on that morning we had an exercise going on, and we were on day two of the exercise, going through our checklists, preparing for the day's events, and this was one of our large-scale NORAD exercises that we did twice a year. That was peacetime to wartime, so we exercised all our different procedures as we would go on up in different readiness. and in defense of the country and how we would do that if we were being attacked. That morning, about 8:30-ish, I remember getting a call from the weapons senior director technician. It was Tech Sergeant Jeremy Powell at the time, saying that we had Boston Center, FAA, on the line, and they had a hijacked aircraft. Our immediate response was, you know, this must be part of the exercise. But it was very clear, as I was talking to the Boston controller, that this was not part of the exercise. It was actually a real hijacked aircraft. And spent the next few hours of that morning, and then in the days, weeks, and months to follow, building up a defense of the nation. But on those 2 or 3 hours that morning, we were immediately responding to the 4 aircraft that were hijacked and hit the both of the towers of the Trade Center, the Pentagon, and then the 4th one, Flight 93, that crashed in Shanksville.
So did all of your training kick in and did everybody just get to work as if it was not an exercise, but the real deal?
Everyone on that operations floor was so well trained. They immediately sprang into action. They were calm. They just did everything that they needed to do at the very best of their ability. It was really pretty impressive to see.
And in over a few short days, we had to figure out how to protect the country because we didn't know what was going to come next.
Right. Well, actually, we had to establish something within hours. So, you know, by the next day, by that day, we had aircraft over the different cities in what we call a CAP. So they would be flying patrol. And then we immediately had to go into a rotation where we were bringing different units up and maintaining that for quite some time.
And we heard that story from General Mankey this morning that the F-16s from the 148th Fighter Wing up in Duluth, Minnesota,
were
in the air and flew a lot of hours.
Mm-hmm.
Ma'am, could you have imagined what kind of changes that was going to create over the 20 years that we've lived through?
Yes. So, the change to the ops tempo, as we call it, was just amazing. I mean, if you look at on the morning of September 11th, we had within the Northeast Air Defense Sector, we had 2 fighter units on what we call alert 24 hours a day, able to respond at a moment's notice. We've doubled that now, and 15 of those 16 are Air National Guard units. I mean, that is core into our mission set. We have upgraded those fighters. We had to upgrade our command and control system because it was it could not process all the radars to be able to get an air picture of the entire United States that we eventually needed to have, and of course the stand up of NORTHCOM to support that, which had not been present prior to 9/11. But even beyond just what was going on within the continental United States is just the ops tempo abroad. You know, we were deploying people to Iraq and Afghanistan on a regular basis. People who came in to the Air National Guard after 9/11 don't know a time when we haven't had heavy deployments.
So the days when I was in the Air National Guard of 1 weekend a month and 2 weeks in the summer, long gone.
Very, very much so.
And with your federal mission with deployments and your state mission for local support, it's way busier than it's ever been.
It's pretty impressive what these airmen do. I mean, they did it all through COVID. I mean, it's just amazing. You know, a moment I talk to people a lot on 9/11 is the fact that we only had those 2 fighter units on alert. So we had to literally call Air National Guard wings and ask them if they could get fighters airborne. There were people driving in through those gates, leaving their civilian employment, driving in, volunteering, getting in the air. I mean, it was the Minuteman soldier construct that we in the Guard live by.
Ma'am, we're just about out of time, but I wonder what you'd have to say to our listeners if some of them are young ladies, were thinking about a career in the Air National Guard.
Yeah, you know, what I would say is that the Air National Guard provides just a wonderful opportunity for people to serve their country, their state, and their local community in either a part-time or a full-time status, whatever fits their lifestyle. And that service can change as their lifestyle changes. And I would just say if you are on active duty and leaving and you want to continue to serve, find a guard unit. We are in all 54 states, territories in the District of Columbia. You will not be sorry that you had that conversation.
Ma'am, I'd like to thank you for taking time out of your busy schedule to spend with us today on Minnesota Military Radio.
Absolutely, my pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you, ma'am. That was Major General Don Deskins, the Deputy Director of the Air National Guard from the Pentagon in Washington, D.C. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. Well, welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. We are recording today from the Pentagon in Washington, D.C., and we're taking a look back at 9/11/2001 to reflect on the changes that have occurred over the last 20 years.
But first, it's time for the Commissioner's Corner, a weekly update from Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. Now here's Commissioner Larry Herkey.
On the 20th anniversary of 9/11, the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs remembers that fateful day. We honor and remember Minnesotans, Minnesota's veterans, and their families whose lives were forever changed by the events of September 11th, 2001. On one of the worst days in U.S. history, we saw some of the bravest acts by American patriots. We'll always honor the heroes of 9/11. Americans will never, ever stand down. We endure, we overcome, and we will never forget the sacrifice of our heroes.
Thank you, Commissioner Herkey. For more information, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com.
And joining me now is Lieutenant General John Jensen, who is the Director of the Army National Guard. He guides the formulation, development, and implementation of all programs and policies affecting the Army National Guard, a force of nearly 335,000 soldiers in 50 states, 3 territories, and the District of Columbia. General Jensen, good to see you again.
Tom, it's a pleasure, as always.
Sir, this show is going to play out over the weekend of 9/11, which is 20 years after that terrible day when we were attacked. And I'm wondering, where were you that day, and how long did it take you to figure out, like the rest of us, what the heck was going on?
Yeah, so I was attending the School of Advanced Military Studies at Fort Leavenworth, Kansas, and the morning of September 11th, as my seminar mates and I always did, you know, we came into the classroom a little bit early, you know, kind of prepare for the day's coursework, and you know, we were chit-chatting, and then, you know, somebody walked into the classroom and said, "Oh, one of the Twin Towers had been hit by a plane," and so, you know, we turned on the TV there in the classroom to watch what was going on, and I think, like most of Americans at that time, you know, we thought it was just an aircraft crash, right? The pilot, you know, something mechanically went wrong with the plane, or the pilot had made some type of error. But then, you know, when the second plane crashed into the next tower, I think, like the rest of America, we knew that that history had been changed, and that our lives were going to change. And so, you know, being in that room of Army officers at that time, you know, obviously we didn't know that we'd still be involved in Afghanistan and Kuwait, you know, 20 years later. But we knew that our careers were about to change, and that, you know, many of us were going to have to go do some really hard things on behalf of our Army and our nation. And so, you know, when I look back at it now, you know, we just couldn't comprehend what it really meant at that time. You know, 20 years later, when you look back at it, I mean, you figure, you know, I'm still serving, and that was a career ago. 20 years is, you know, you, after 20 years of service, you qualify for your full retirement, and now I'm still serving, and, you know, being a small part of our nation's effort during the 20 years, it's just amazing that we've, what was asked of the Army Guard, what was asked of our Army, what was asked of our military members and our families as well. And so it's been a long journey.
In general, also that day, there was an aircraft that crashed into the Pentagon, and we were fortunate enough before we talked to you today to go through the 9/11 memorial here at the Pentagon, and it's just amazing.
Yeah, it is. As a matter of fact, two National Guard members were killed in the attack on the Pentagon that day, and so. You know, and I think you get a sense for this for those who haven't traveled through or been able to walk through the Pentagon. But I think, Tom, you got a sense of this today that, you know, when you walk through the halls of the Pentagon, what you really get a sense for is the history of our military, all of our conflicts, all of our services, all of the contributions to our nation. And that obviously the memorial over there is a very special place.
You definitely get the feel of the history and the duty and the honor to serve our country. Yeah. And, General, going back to 9/11/2001, I can't remember in my lifetime where all of the commercial aircraft were grounded. And the only aircraft in the, that were in the air until we figured out what was going on were F-16s and military aircraft, and everybody just trying to get a feel for what's going on, what happened, and how do we deal with it?
Yeah, you're exactly right, Tom. So I was at Fort Leavenworth, and, you know, the shortly after that, within a couple hours after the attacks, you know, they sent everybody home, in part because, you know, people had friends and in some cases family that worked in the Pentagon or in the World Trade Centers. And, you know, we weren't really sure what was going to come next. But like you said, very quickly, the Air Force and our Air National Guard as well, quickly started flying combat air patrols over key cities, large cities in the United States, Washington, D.C., one of them. And it became, you know, about securing our country because we weren't sure what was going to come next.
And guardsmen at the airports, armed?
Yeah. So shortly after that, within a couple weeks, President Bush authorized the mobilization of up to 50,000 guardsmen. And so Operation Noble Eagle was the United States portion of that. And so it was airports, it was our borders, it was key infrastructure and key facilities across the country that were very quickly being secured by our military and in many cases by guardsmen. And then the second part of that was Operation Enduring Freedom, which was the Afghanistan operation. But all of those were very quickly put in place.
We're speaking with Lieutenant General John Jensen, Director of the Army National Guard, on Minnesota Military Radio. General, now looking back on the last 20 years, I think you knew after I got back from Vietnam, I was a member of the 133rd Airlift Wing. And back then, it was one weekend a month and 2 weeks in the summertime, and that's the way it was. But things have changed dramatically in the last 20 years.
Yeah, so since 9/11, we've mobilized over 1 million guardsmen, Army and Air, in support of global operations. I enlisted in the Army Guard in 1982, and in 1982, through most of my career, it was 2 days a month and 2 weeks during the summer. But after 9/11, that changed, and it changed drastically. And we've asked a lot of our guardsmen, their families, and their employers to meet the needs of our nation. And they've responded. Our nation's responded. People ask me, you know, what's the impact of 20 years of deployments with COVID and everything else we've been doing here? And what I tell them is that, you know, the Army National Guard, while it's a stress force, it's still a healthy force. We're going to meet and exceed our end strength mission here in the Army Guard this year. Our mission assigned to us by the United States Army is 336,500 soldiers, and we've already broken the 337,000 mark, and so I think that's a testament to the great soldiers and great communities that they come from, that after 20 years of Afghanistan and Iraq and many, many, many other operations, the Guard is able to meet its strength mission.
General, it seems to me the last couple of years have been maybe the most stressful on the Army and Air National Guard, but on the Army National Guard side, all the federal deployments, all the state call-ups. How are soldiers doing? How are they doing around the country? Are they? I know they're resilient. Are they in pretty good shape, sir?
Well, I mean, we're a stress force, and it's not all just because of our service in the military. I mean, COVID-19, the last year and a half has put a lot of stress not just on the citizens of this country, but the citizens across the globe. And so it has been a very, very difficult year and a half due to COVID. You know, we're not out of it yet. I'm very proud of the fact that in Minnesota, 70% of the population or more is vaccinated, and that's great. But when you take that environment and then you add everything else that our military does and that our reserve component soldiers and airmen do as part of that, it can add some stress. I always thought that we were in a pretty good position in Minnesota because of the community support that we received through the Yellow Ribbon program, that kind of kicked off the nationwide movement of the Yellow Ribbon program. But we have gotten, you know, historically just great, great support from our communities in Minnesota, and it makes a difference. It really makes a difference. You know, your experience coming home from war was significantly different than the experience that our soldiers and airmen. And that's how we've been able to do this in a volunteer status, right? Everybody who has served during the global war on terrorism, we're all volunteers.
And, sir, the other side of that equation is I have an opportunity on Minnesota Military Radio to interview a lot of your soldiers. They seem pretty proud of the fact that they, when they get called up on state duty, they're helping their friends and neighbors and family.
Well, there's just something that is, you know, obviously it's a little bit of a more of an emotional event when you're asked to come support inside your own state boundaries there, whether it's a response to an ice storm, a tornado, a flood, COVID-19, civil unrest. It just means more because it's neighbors helping neighbors there for sure. And usually it's an event that is no notice. I mean, your life gets interrupted with no notice, and you're out in the streets somewhere helping Minnesotans.
But they feel pretty good about that,
General.
Just one last question, sir,
okay,
for all of our listeners. If they're considering a career in the Army National Guard, Lieutenant General Jensen, what would you have to say to them?
Well, I can only talk about my experience and how it's impacted my life and my family. And, you know, I've been very fortunate and very blessed. I had no idea the opportunities that were going to be made available to me that young early morning when I raised my right hand and swore an oath to defend the Constitution. And, you know, look, not everybody who enlists in the Army National Guard grows up to be a lieutenant general, so I know my experience is pretty special. But if you're looking for opportunities, if you're looking for an opportunity to serve your fellow Minnesotans, the Minnesota National Guard is a great way to do that. And you just never know where it's going to take you. It very well might take you to the Pentagon one day. So, you know, it's a great organization that has accomplished a tremendous amount of things over its history. And I'm just very proud to have served inside the Minnesota National Guard.
Well, General, thank you very much for spending some time with us on the 20th anniversary of 9/11 from the Pentagon here.
Thanks, Tom. It's always a pleasure to have you. And please come back anytime.
Thank you, sir. That was Lieutenant General John Jensen, the Director of the Army National Guard from the Pentagon in Washington, D.C. Well, welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. We are recording today from the Pentagon in Washington, D.C., and we're taking a look back at 9/11/2001 to reflect on the changes that have occurred over the last 20 years. And joining me now is General Daniel Hokanson, who serves as the 29th Chief of the National Guard Bureau and as a member of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. In this capacity, he serves as a military advisor to the President, Secretary of Defense, National Security Council, and is the Department of Defense's official channel of communication to the governors and state adjutants general on all matters pertaining to the National Guard. He's responsible for ensuring that more than 453,000 Army and Air National Guard personnel are accessible, capable, and ready to protect the homeland and provide combat-ready resources to the Army and Air Force. General, thanks for joining us again on Minnesota Military Radio.
Hey, Tom, great to see you in person, and it's wonderful to join you guys again today.
Sir, you've had, since we talked to you in January 2020, things have changed a little bit for you. You got another star, four-star general, and chief of the Guards Bureau. Congratulations, sir.
Hey, thank you, Tom.
Sir, can you share a little bit about your career with our listeners? I know you were Oregon Adjutant General at one point, and then you spent some time out here in D.C.
Yeah, so Tom, it's a great story I've been able to be part of. I'm actually a third-generation National Guardsman. Both my grandfather and father were members of the Minnesota National Guard, and through the years, I always knew the importance of the Guard and my time on active duty. My wife and I decided to leave active service. Of course, we came into the National Guard, and it's just been an incredible run to work with so many amazing young men and women. And I look back now at the pictures of my grandfather, my father, when they were members of the Minnesota Guard, And, you know, it just makes me really proud to be part of the team and carry on that tradition and then continue to serve with just the incredible service members in all services, but particularly the National Guard.
General, this show today, we're talking about 9/11, 2001. I can't believe it's been 20 years.
Yeah.
Can you take us back 20 years? I think you were a major in the Oregon National Guard.
Yeah, Tom, back when I was young and cool. But, you know, I think back to that day, like many people, it was really one of those moments that you just never forget. And, you know, having been on the West Coast, I actually had got up early that morning with my wife. We were training for a marathon, so we went on a long run, and then we came back and went to sleep briefly before I was going to go to work. And my mother-in-law called and said, hey, you got to turn on the news. A plane hit one of the World Trade Center towers. And I remember years earlier reading a story about how an Air Force plane in bad weather had actually crashed in the Empire State Building. So I just thought, oh gosh, I wonder if it was an event like that. But when I turned on the TV and saw crystal clear blue skies, I knew that was not the case. And while we were watching the TV live, the second plane hit the tower, and I ran upstairs immediately, and my wife didn't realize until she heard me running out the door that I had left. And I was a commander of a aviation flight facility there in Salem, Oregon. And, you know, we didn't know what was happening. We didn't have a full grasp. We just knew that there were some significant things taking place in our country. And I went straight to the airfield. We were a medical evacuation unit. We got all the helicopters ready, started calling in our crews. We actually even went through the point where we took our transport trucks, we called them deuce and a halves, and rolled them in front of every gate that accessed our base and called everybody in because we just didn't know what was next. And I'll never forget that day, you know, walking out, we actually called the tower because they closed all air traffic. And for the first time in my entire time there, we actually walked out on the active runway. And it was so quiet. None of us had ever seen like that. It just was such a kind of an eerie experience at the time.
Well, sir, and nobody really knew what was going on for days.
Yeah.
And some of the other guests that we've had on the show today said that most of the guardsmen across the nation reported for duty without even being called.
Yes, sir, and that was the case. People just started showing up immediately. Because, you know, as guardsmen, that's what we do. You know, our motto is always ready, always there, and they were living through that. Just them leaving their work, driving there. I just remember even that day in Oregon was a beautiful day, and everybody was coming in. What can I do? What are we going to do? Where, you know, how can we make a difference today? And it was pretty amazing.
We're speaking with General Daniel Hokanson, Chief of the National Guard Bureau on Minnesota Military Radio. Sir, 20 years have passed. The National Guard, of course, has a federal mission and the state or local mission. The last couple of years have been really busy, but one of the significant things that have happened in the last 20 years is your position, Chief of the National Guard Bureau, has a seat at the table of the Joint Chiefs. And can I assume that means that's a result of increased missions, so much going on that you need to be there and be part of those discussions and then come back and say, okay, we got some more missions. Who's available?
Yes, sir. And I think when you look at that, you know, the over 450,000 Army and Air National Guardsmen, you know, we're one-fifth of the joint force, the entire military. So one in every five people wearing a military uniform is in the National Guard. And what we have shown and demonstrated really since 9/11 is the National Guard went from a previous mission really as a strategic reserve in case there was a world war to where now we're an operational reserve where everyone in the National Guard today has either re-enlisted or re-upped since 9/11. Or they have enlisted since then. And the expectation is today is that they're going to serve their country overseas, that they're going to be involved in missions outside the country, as well as serving their communities every single day. And I try and remind folks, you know, when we look at the National Guard, the Guard was really designed as the combat reserve of the Army and the Air Force. We're manned, trained, and equipped to fight and win our nation's wars. But all of that manning, training, and equipping also really makes us capable to respond to literally anything in our communities. And if you look back over the past 20 years since 9/11, of course, we had over 1 million soldiers and airmen deploy overseas in support of combat operations. But we also had Hurricane Katrina, numerous other hurricanes, record wildfire seasons, flooding, all those things that our communities see each and every day. And of course, over the past year, you saw the significant contributions that the Guard has put towards civil disturbance operations and, of course, the COVID pandemic.
Sir, I was going to say that the last 2 years, it seems like the National Guard's been busier than I've ever seen them.
Yes, sir.
And we've watched over the last 11 years that even in the Minnesota National Guard in the 34th Infantry Division goes through the training cycles. And by the time they finish up at NTC, National Training Center, here it comes. Here comes another big deployment. So you're highly trained and ready to go, and off they go on your federal duties. But state duties have taken a lot of time the last, with, as you say, the coronavirus and civil disturbance.
Yeah. Yes, sir. And like the 34th is a great example. I mean, they were the first unit in the Army to go to the National Training Center in a COVID environment. And that's just coming off of all the events in Minneapolis. And, you know, they're really representative of the entire National Guard. You know, it goes back to living true to that motto, always ready, always there, whenever we had asked. And that's why our guardsmen become members of the National Guard. They want to be in their communities, have their civilian career and their family, but they also want to make a difference by serving locally.
One last question for you, General. For our listeners back home, if they're thinking about a career in the military or in the Air or Army National Guard, what would you have to say to them?
You know, I would really encourage them. You know, we're looking for the kind of people that, you know, they want to stay in their communities, but want to serve their nation and make a difference. And when you look at what the National Guard does literally around the globe every single day, that you will make a difference. And there's a lot of opportunities that the National Guard provides as well, educational benefits, reduced medical care, but also a chance to earn another skill and, frankly, work with some of the best people that you'll ever meet in your life. A lot of the folks that I see that I worked with previously, they're just like friends for life. That shared experience and part of being something bigger than yourself. And sometimes it's challenging what you do. But when you do that, you learn a lot about yourself and you learn a lot about your capabilities. And you also learn what a team can do and what a difference you can make. Because nothing gets done without every individual doing their part. And we like to do everything we can to provide that opportunity.
General, like, thank you for taking your time out of your busy schedule to visit with us today. Appreciate it very much.
Hey, likewise, Tom. Hope to see you in Minnesota next time.
I hope we do that, sir. That was General Daniel Hokanson, Chief of the National Guard Bureau on Minnesota Military Radio.
We're just about out of time. I'd like to thank our guests for joining us this week, Major General Sean Mankey, Major General Don Deskins, Lieutenant General John Jensen, Chief of the National Guard Bureau, General Daniel Hokanson, Commissioner Larry Herkey, the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. Please join us next week as we talk about Military Appreciation Day at the Minnesota State Fair. That's coming up next weekend on this station or online anytime at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. I'm Tom Lyons, and I hope that you make a difference in someone's life this week.
Minnesota Military Radio is a production of iHeartMedia, the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, the Minneapolis VA, Beyond the Yellow Ribbon, and the Minnesota National Guard. Your host is Tom Lyons, founder and owner of Phelan Partners Limited, a merger and acquisition advisory firm. Tom is a life member of the American Legion, VFW, Vietnam Veterans of America, and the DAV. For podcasts and the latest updates, follow us at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com.